I'm here also.
Wonderful. Well, you know, to start out with, guys, I kind of gave you a little snapshot of the first one I'll bring up is NASA. And, you know, I know as a fact, guys, that trillions of dollars in today's money was spent on that space program. Oftentimes, for things like, well, I think they had a toilet seat at one point that was $60,000 that it cost or something. They were using hammers at NASA that they had billed at $500 for a regular ball peen hammer. In other words, they were sending out to the GAO, which is the Government Accounting Office, bills for hammers that cost $500 and toilet seats that cost $60,000. In other words, they needed to show a place in their accounting that all this money was going, and of course they couldn't. So they inflated these in these figures and made me think that NASA was probably just a black hole of graft and theft, and that it was probably financing the Zionist operations worldwide and helping establish Israel as the fourth most powerful military force in the world. What do you guys think about that? What do you think, Eric, about NASA?
Well, it may have, see, the problem you have is some of the people that got involved with it may have been real people with real serious intentions, but it looks like about 1963 is when the decision was made to fake the landing. That's when President Kennedy went in front of the United Nations and basically wanted to call off the whole moon mission and work with the Russians. That's when it looks like NASA was taken over, and they said, get rid of Kennedy, let's just take over. And I think that's when things started to really change, but some of the people in NASA are probably genuine. But then but if you look at who's running it, it looks like they've been taken over, and we don't know where the money's going. And then you have the Star Wars program. We don't know what happened, where all that money's going. So I think,
and there are British companies like BAE that are involved in providing NASA with supposed equipments and avionics and whatnot. And why would the British not? Nobody in the British government in any intelligence agency has put up a good argument about the truth of NASA's theft and the fraud of the moon.
Well, I think with a lot of this particular subject, I don't know too much about it. I've just seen some of the evidence presented on Eric's site, and I've got some from a friend of mine who's a professional photographer. There are certainly a lot of question marks over it. What I could say, in the sense of vested interest, is that a lot of people made a lot of money out of it. And had a major scam been perpetrated on the taxpayer, I would imagine their main concern for keeping that going today and preventing people from looking into this or taking it seriously is that they would live with the very real fear of being asked to pay money back. And that in itself is the single reason why so many firms would not want to expose it, especially if they engaged a lot of people. It's also an irony that since we don't have, or they don't have rather, a front to siphon money through any longer, we had this mysterious rabbi in charge of the U.S. military budget who lost, I don't know what the term lost means in this context, really, but they admit in the Pentagon they lost, was it $1.2
trillion? $2.6 trillion.
Yeah. I mean, how do you lose that amount of equipment? Military equipment is not all buttons. There's some very big lumps of machinery out there, all gone missing. And that is of a magnitude similar to the kind of money that went missing in the NASA program, isn't it?
That's right. And when NASA was winding down and there were no real missions to the moon, we mysteriously got the Star Wars black hole. And now the Star Wars has been on the back burner, that they've got other money missing. And it seems like this taxpayer theft of the American public has gone on in many different ways. Eric, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, yeah. See, I think what part of the money went to with Star Wars is that they were trying, if you look at that program, what they claim to be trying, it's weapons coming out of space, you know, things like the pieces of tungsten flying down at real high speed, and some other things. I think what they were trying to do was develop technology that would allow them to fake these alien aircraft. I know people don't believe this, but look at the promotion by this Zionist group promoting aliens. They've been doing it for decades, and if they could just create the technology to fake one of these craft, they could pretend aliens are out there.
Well, you know, they got this guy Greer, who is clearly working with a lot of powerful Jewish money, and his surrounding supporters are from that same community. It is not a big jump to go there with that, Eric.
It's also Art Bell in the Coast to Coast Radio, George Norrie. Everyone you look at, it's the same thing, and every one of them lies about 9/11. They all deny Zionism and all of that. They're all the same group of liars, and they're also pushing this heavily in Japan and China. They want to get those people to believe that there really are these Martians running around out there. And this is not a coincidence. They're all over the planet pushing this alien stuff.
One of the issues there, again, I mean, that brings us back to your introduction, Daryl. You know, what the reality is in respect of technologies and where people are at and whether there are other life forms out there are certainly issues which will have been covered by intelligence services in different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how much of this is game theory with one intelligence group trying to convince another intelligence group or to get them in denial of it. What, you know, it's very difficult to say in respect of those technologies, but bringing it back to 9/11, we can be utterly sure that even the most basic under-equipped intelligence services in some of these small 150-plus countries in the world, they all know full well what the real deal is. I don't think any of them have ever believed the press version from the first day till now. When we often, as people involved in this study, meet with other people who have difficulty saying, well, surely people in the intelligence communities would expose it.
Yeah, but doesn't that give us, see, that's the argument, you know something, Muhammad, I'm going to interject here, that's the argument often used by people who say the story must be true, because wouldn't there have been somebody from Russia or from Malaysia or from China, Vietnam, wouldn't one of them have said this was a big lie? How could they get the entire world on board to support this lie in all of its forms? How could they do that?
Well, that's a very important question, and one that does have an answer. It's a very sensible answer when you understand the way the intelligence communities work. Firstly, and I'll give this by example, there was a double agent inside, very high clearance inside the United States in the CIA. He was within the top three tiers of clearance. He was the third level clearance. And he had access to the entire post-nuclear war defense plan of the United States, where the president was going to be staying, where the command and control structures were, how they operated, the whole thing. Over a period of several years, he leaked all of this information to the KGB during the Cold War. He leaked the whole plan, and the Russians were sat on it for 9 years. And although the Americans were getting feedback from their moles with inside the KGB that very important information was coming through, they couldn't tell them precisely what the information was because the Russians wouldn't circulate it in their own intelligence services for fear of moles, and they couldn't find out who it was coming from. And this man was actually eventually was given the job of heading up the investigation to look for himself. That was one of the double ironies. It's documented this on the internet.
Mm.
So when we look at the intelligence services, the Russians knew all of this stuff, but they had two reasons for not disclosing it. The first is that had they disclosed knowledge of it, the Americans would have changed their plan. And two, if the Americans became aware of precisely what the knowledge was, it would help them pin down the mole far more securely. So the Russians and the Chinese, even probably the British and the Germans, they know what's gone on inside of Mossad and CIA planning with 9/11. But if they reveal that, firstly, it could actually compromise who their double agents are. Because people will say only these three people here had access to that file or document or whatever. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So there are reasons why in the intelligence community they don't come rushing out with this stuff. They would need a good reason to expose and play their hand and tell people what they've already got.
Now, does that explain why Tan Mahathir Muhammad would not come out and stand in front of a camera and say that he's thoroughly and completely convinced that 9/11 was an inside job and that the fingerprints of the Mossad is all over it, and that it, I mean, why wouldn't he just stand there and tell the world? He could get cameras from around the planet to film him doing it.
Again, this is the, when he's looking at his own agenda, if you like, and plan of things that he wants to get out in the world. Mahathir is very much a man who wants to promote the banking conspiracy and the financial side of it. So he would, for his own purposes, stand back from any other thing, even if he was fully aware of it. He wouldn't come out and speak on the matter because he's more interested in trying to get through to the general public on the matter of the financial controls which have been put in place by this group and how they try to manipulate entire economies. So for him, that message is more important. For us, we're living in a different part of the world and looking with different glasses, we would say that's not the most important message in our world. But in his world, where he saw the Malaysian economy being thrown down the pan and all the Asian tigers being thrown down the pan, that's the most important thing. That's what gets him going. So he's on a one-track road in that sense. But I'm fairly sure that privately he would have no difficulty in confirming what we were saying.
Well, now, Eric, you know, when you started making inroads into the NASA stuff, you saw a credibility hit squad from the Zionist community pour all over you. I mean, I've brought up the name Walper several times in broadcasts, and then we found a direct relationship to Aaron Russo with Walper and his production company. But more than that, it seemed like you had touched a nerve, and that kind of egged you on to even further investigation, because when you touch someone's raw nerve and they react a certain way, it kind of gives you confirmation that you're right on target, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, the Penn and Teller show, when they put me and Jimmy Walter on and a few other people, the interesting thing about it is what they were trying to make fun of. And it was 9/11, the Kennedy assassination, and the Apollo moon landing. Those three. And if you look at all three of them, you'll see you find evidence that the same group of Zionists is in all three of them. That's why they would have picked those particular conspiracies. And you look at Frank, David Wolper, that, you know, this Jewish producer of the TV shows, and, you know, Neil Armstrong, who supposedly walked on the moon, won't talk to hardly anybody. He's hiding, but he'll go to David Wolper's private golf course and play golf with him. He'll play with a Hollywood, television type producer, but he won't talk to the general public. He hides from everybody else. There's something, you know, the more you look into it, the more you realize there's something wrong. But David Wolper then also exposes one other thing, and he says he was just walking down the streets of New York one day, and he ran across this Russian who happened to have amazing footage of the Russian space program that never had been seen before. Now, think about how many times people walk down the street. You run across a Russian with Soviet film that nobody's ever seen.
Yesterday, Eric, right?
Well, yeah. So this is, you look at Russia, you find a lot of these people are from that area, that Khazarian area, that place in Russia where the Protocols of Zion supposedly came from, that place where they started sending out people 100 years ago to, you know, different nations to start the Zionist groups. This is where they have a lot of contacts. And this could be what's going on. They are in Russia. They're in their space program in Russia. There's cheating going on in every nation, and they may be blackmailing every nation. You see, this is part of the problem that all, when you say, why doesn't Mahathir Mohammed. Yeah, why doesn't he talk? They could be in a lot of different governments, and they're putting pressure on people to not say certain things and blackmailing them. Because also, look at that article, the women of Mossad, how they have teams of women who will offer themselves. They'll use their own body as, you know, like prostitutes.
Well, if that's to be believed, and I haven't got any evidence to say it's not to be believed, I'm kind of ambient about it. The faces of these women they look like they're teenagers. They don't look like they're 20 yet, Eric.
Well, yeah, but teenage, 18, some people do look like. Look at George Stephanopoulos. I mean, that guy looked young even when he was in his 40s. I mean, you can't go by that. That's one of the advantages. You find someone who looks young, but they're not necessarily young. But see, the point is, they could be using this. I mean, look at some of the strange people, even in America. You could see it with the governor of New Jersey. He got involved with an Israeli, you know, homosexual relationship, supposedly. That guy was willing to offer himself in a homosexual relationship in order to get into the New Jersey government, Homeland Security Department. And then you look at some of these other people. I mean, look at Judy Andreas. What is she doing? Wandering around, you know, meeting people like John Kaminsky and others. I mean, these people, they don't, you gotta take it seriously. This is a political movement for 100 years, at least, to take over.
But I don't see, here's the thing. I mean, as many years as I've been looking into this, I haven't got a single scrap of solid evidence against Judy Andreas.
Well, I'm saying,
you know what I mean, Eric? This would be in a court of law. This would be hearsay.
That's right. But she's involved with John Kaminsky. She got involved with him.
Well, she's not anymore. Apparently, he turned on her. But one of the things I'd like to bring out here is that oftentimes we're forced because, look, all three of us are sitting in front of a phone system and maybe a computer system. But not a whole lot more.
Well, yeah.
And it's tough to make the direct connections, isn't it?
Well, it is. But you see, I'm not saying what's happening. I'm just saying, look at this. It fits the pattern. I'm not saying this is what's happening. But you got John Kaminsky, who's like some wild neo-Nazi, getting involved with Judy Andreas in a sexual manner. And they don't live near each other. They have to travel by plane. And he's complaining he's broke. And what, you know, you have to look at this, you look at the governor of New Jersey, you look at all the situations. They are using sex as one of their big lures.
Well, actually, if I can just jump in there, there is obviously teachings inside of the form of Judaism which we have today based on Talmud and even a little bit of Torah, which does allow for that type of practice. There was a famous biblical episode where one of the Israelites, a female, went and married an idolatrous king.
Esther.
Who had been trying to wage war on
Queen Esther.
Yeah, exactly. And she's actually down in folklore history as somebody who saved the community through her sacrifice. And it's seen as a righteous act under certain, not all, but under certain strains of Judaism, certain groups of out there. For them, it's not only permissible behavior for a Jewish woman, but it's also a righteous act. And it has been used throughout time since then. It's not a new thing. It's a very, very old thing.
Well, look at Monica Lewinsky and then that other one who disappeared. I forgot her name.
Monica Lewinsky was an absolutely fantastic case in point. What woman, after doing what she did, would then put her blouse in the freezer for the next 18 months until such time as Clinton publicly denied anything going on, so that she actually had the shirt in perfect frozen condition preserved in her freezer, which could go off for a DNA sample?
After the dust settles, she ends up at the London School of Economics.
Well, she'll end up absolutely promoted anywhere for having A, done the act, and B, preserved the shirt with the evidence on. I mean, that is just not the behavior of two ordinary people together, is it? You know,
no.
I mean, it's very clear that was premeditated as an act, and that the result of the act was to be preserved until it was required. And this comes back to your point, I think, that you're driving at through this, Eric, a lot, is the idea of blackmail. Well, blackmail is something which is used in the fraudulent, whatever that means in this context, protocols, that they would promote people that they could blackmail. And that's always been part of it. Again, the intelligence services are supposed to know who's blackmailable, and one of the real functions of the intelligence services for Homeland Security is to make sure that we don't have politicians who are blackmailable, and that if they get into those positions, their job is to oust them for us for the good of society. And we rely on them to undertake that type of activity. And instead, what we find is them actually defending the blackmailers and increasing corruption. These people have a job which, you know, ordinarily we're supposed to sleep well in our beds knowing that these people are moving in dark circles, hiding in shadows, and looking out for the public good and defending the country and defending the people. And when they do that, we love them, like we love James Bond, the movie icon. He represents that. But what they've become in this twisted, contorted world view of how we should run people and society is a mechanism for the reverse, for actually joining in events like 9/11, for joining with the terrorists and committing mass terrorist acts. And there must be a lot of these people who are saying, you know, I didn't sign up for this.
No.
There must be a lot of people who now, they're saying, you know, when I joined this, I thought I was coming into this world view and that I was going to be protecting my people and my country, my constitution, and that I thought that's what I was going to be doing. And now I found myself working for a bunch of people who are basically criminally insane, who are making me commit acts against the very people that I wanted to serve and protect. There must be people out there, party to these events, who are feeling bad about their own involvement.
Well, you listen to this. I mean, first of all, it wasn't 3,000 people that died that day, because Eric will attest to the fact that we've had probably 10,000 or more people die directly related to the dust that they breathed in, cancers and tumors and sicknesses, and probably another 20,000 on their deathbed now. So this and then we can ascribe most of our dead soldiers and the Blackwater people who've been duped into fighting for money. And when you add it all up, and all the Mexican soldiers they've duped, and all of the dead Iraqis, we're talking a million people have been murdered here, if you add it all up.
That's correct.
I mean, who in the world signed up in the intelligence community to forward the idea that a million murders and senseless deaths is part of the working relationship they have with their employer, which is the government? It's ridiculous to think that, but yet this is where we are today.
And what we want to say, Daryl, is we want to say to those people who are in those roles, there's one thing that they can do that would help everybody because of this silence from their area. We need them, even if they don't come out and speak publicly, to continue leaking what they know, leaking information. This is what they do for a living. They're very good at it. They're professionals. And they should do it out of responsibility to the people that they're there to protect and serve.
Well, that's true.
When this structure fully crumbles, Daryl, if they don't do that, they will be held as accessories to murder.
Yep. Well, but let's go into, and Eric, you probably don't know a lot about this, but we've talked about it a little. This Dunblane massacre up in Scotland, and now we've got a new leader of your country as Prime Minister, and we have Lord Robertson being elevated from the bowels of some dinky little hick village all the way up to head of NATO, because in his little area, this man who had a very close association with your Prime Minister, who turned out to be a pedophile and photographing young children, and then turns around and murders them all. And my point being, we've got it in America with Gannon, we've got it with DeCamp, John DeCamp over here with the Boys Town. These politicians, again, we've got some serious compromise being happened, compromised people running our government. Take a look at this guy Brown, and take a look at what George Bush has been accused of having done. And it's unbelievable that the intelligence services who know about this stuff would not put this everywhere.
It is the duty of the intelligence services to prevent people like that from gaining positions of responsibility. That is one of their functions. That is part of their remit, to make sure that the whole government process functions as it's meant to. And when it can be compromised like this, their job is to root out that compromise and to bring those people down through leaks to the newspapers or whatever. We would expect them to be doing that. And this now brings us, I think, to, you know, two major problems that we face. the failure, the mass failure of the intelligence services to do their job.
Yep.
And secondly, another group of people who know what's going on, who do use Google, who are on the internet, are the mainstream media.
Yep.
I know some websites like to point at the mainstream media as the enemy as a little bit, but they're not a little bit. They are the major enemy now, because
yep.
for this message to go mainstream, it's down to them. Their journalists, their ownership, all of this are looking at the evidence, seeing the facts, and trying to either ignore it or belittle it as conspiracy theories and attach labels to it, like anti-Semite. Try to put a label on it so that people don't take it seriously. These people will leave us with no alternative but to disband what they are today if they don't function. We also rely on the press to snoop in, investigate, find out what's going on, and fearlessly report. When we get the mainstream media failing, and we get brave people, say like Christopher Berlin, going out there and saying, all right, you guys are too frightened to take this on, I'm not. He goes out there and does it, and then the proof of the pudding is in the eating. It is so disappointing how many websites out there have ignored what happened during his case, or
yep.
only reported it very briefly.
Well, what do you think that says? It said to Eric and I that those sites were never interested in the truth to start with, and that in fact what they were really out there to do was to muddle the facts and get people to not pay attention to the salient issues that should be in the forefront of everyone's thinking. And instead, Christopher, now I think they probably at some point right now have him under threat, or have him, you know, in a situation where he can't move because, look, when you've got family and you've got children and all this other stuff, and had we come to his aid, he wouldn't be in that situation, is my point.
Daryl, you know, when we look at a lot of these sites, I'm not going to mention them because those names have been said previously, and they know who they are. They'll come and download this broadcast. We know that we mean them. Their sites are full of links to stories that other people have already published.
Yep.
Christopher Berlin was doing his own investigations, coming up with his own research and publishing original material. That's what's different about him to them, and that's what I want people out there to understand, to think about this. Christopher Berlin would get on the phone, use shoe leather, go around and speak to people, investigate, and come up with things that people hadn't publicized previously.
Yep.
These other guys who, if you like, are championing the movement, are linking to a lot of mainstream stories, and they have very little research of their own, genuine research of their own, in these areas. And yet, you know, you and Eric have fairly small websites compared to theirs, but you have, and or had with Christopher, original, genuine research that nobody else had. Now, everybody listen hard, because Daryl and I have been through this. When the police turned up, they had several vehicles fitted with cameras that recorded all of the events. Those films, all of them, from every vehicle that recorded the events outside that house, were destroyed. That is the destruction of evidence. Now, Daryl, we know that in itself is a criminal activity.
It's a felony. It's not a misdemeanor that they charged him with, but rather, when you destroy important evidence in a case, it is considered a felonious act.
Exactly. It's a major crime. So here we have the police destroying evidence that's supposed to support their case. Now, because of the blindness of courts, the judge was prepared to say, well, obviously that wasn't important, so we'll ignore that. Whereas to any sane, rational person, they will say, the police will have only destroyed that evidence for one reason. It did not support their case.
That's right. That's right. And it wasn't just one vehicle, as you pointed out. Eric, you know, with Christopher's situation right now, let's go into that for a moment here. You know, in spite of all of the, you know, the fears and whatnot, there is still no evidence that he can move freely. He can talk honestly. He can speak on any of these issues. Do further research. All of this stuff, and he is placing, for some reason I don't understand, a lot of faith in what I have come to understand is a Zionist, and in without reserve, I will say the person that he's placed faith in tentatively is a Zionist. That does not sound like Christopher I know.
Well, yeah, but you see, she sounds, she comes across very nice when you first meet her. See, this is the problem. It's like there's a lot of people that when you first meet them come across very nice and they want to help you. Until you know somebody, you don't always know what they really are. And so he could have been duped. The problem he ran into is there was not much support for him. And so what is he going to do? He watches a jury convict him, you know, the entire jury. There wasn't even a disagreement among these people. And so he watches that. He sees that there's almost nobody in the courtroom that's really there to help him. And so he may have been wondering, you know, here's somebody offering to help. Maybe he went and took help from somebody that he really can't trust. But see, I heard from him the other day. He did actually make a phone call. But it was a very, very brief call, and he really can't talk much. He's basically saying, I'm alive, don't worry, I'll call you back. But what he asked, people have to realize is, how is he, with his whole family, living in hiding and living in fear, going to make anybody else feel good? You can't, when you're frightened, when your family's in hiding, you're not going to comfort other people. You're going to make them wonder, what is he afraid of? And, you know, what is he scared of? Why should we feel good when he's frightened?
Well, Eric, I mean, here's the problem, though. There's a continuation of the support for this person that I absolutely have zero faith in. I will never sign on to her as a spokesperson in any at any level for Christopher, whether he tells me to or not. This person is not to be trusted. There's just absolutely no way that she should be trusted for anything. I wouldn't let her walk my dog.
Well, yeah, so it's I know what you mean. The problem everyone runs into is, if you are in trouble, who are you going to get some help from? Because a lot of people, you will need help. I mean, if you're trying to run away somewhere, you might start asking, where do I go? How do I get out of here? What should I do? You have this problem. Who do you trust? And
it would also help if there was at least among the people who are genuine. And let's face facts, you guys have done so well to expose attempts by, you know, people in the intelligence services who should know better, but don't, and who try to get inside this movement. You've done a brilliant job of unmasking them and showing to the ordinary guy out there, hey, look, you know, these kinds of people are moving. There may be people that maybe we have suspicions on. Maybe those suspicions are unfounded. If they're unfounded, why did they not behave with solidarity? This man was doing original research. He's known to have done original research for many years. His credentials and his status is beyond question. Why did they not come out and make a fuss? That just one line afterwards, oh, he got convicted yesterday, oh, he got sentenced yesterday. It's not enough. Even if there's people that we don't necessarily see eye to eye with, if we don't stand shoulder to shoulder and bury the hatchet when it comes to a serious matter like this, then they're not part of the same movement.
That's right. Well, that to me told me everything I needed to know about them as a punctuation. You see, when we've been looking into these people in this so-called truth movement, and that's the truth movement, as in any description I've seen as far as actions, is a lie movement. They are not coming to our aid or Christopher's aid because it's by design, not by accident. These people are not working for the truth. People, and I'm gonna go out on a limb right now and just throw this into the mix. We'll pick it up later. Ron Paul, the guy yesterday was one of the people present during a 414-0 vote in favor of Israel, and he was not absent. He was there. This is the same guy who says we should get rid of the Federal Reserve and go to the gold standard. And and you know as well as I do, Muhammad, the gold standard is a complete lie. We'll be selling out to Rothschild hook, line, and sinker if we go into the gold standard. And what we've got here is I can't trust this guy as far as I can throw him on the issues. And we've got people like Alex Jones pushing him like a mad dog.
I have not even bothered looking at anybody in mainstream politics. There may be one or two outliers with a few opinions that are worth following, but the whole political mechanism, if anybody can't recognize it for show business, if people can't see that it's actually Hollywood, and the fact is that the bankers and the producers and the directors remain the same, even though they change the script and the actors, the fact of the matter is that people behind it remain the same. Until people can wake up to that, then you're not going to progress. As long as people turn around and say, hey, let's vote for this politician or that politician, it's like, no, you're voting for that political party. Probably 70% of both parties are funded by the Zionists. You know, these people will come under intense pressure to back down here, there, and everywhere. The photographs will come out, the threats will come out, the blackmails will come out. They will collapse until such time as the infrastructure that underpins these are changed, these people and these institutions are changed, until the press behaves correctly, until the intelligence services behave correctly, then there's no point in looking at any politician. It's a complete waste of time.
Yeah. I agree. Eric, what do you want to add to that?
Well, if you look at the Anti-Defamation League.us, you'll see them saying that they've got an article from July 10th, 2007, which is a couple of days ago. The Anti-Defamation League salutes Congressman Ron Paul. He's the leading advocate for freedom in our nation's capital. I mean, they love the guy.
That's if you're endorsed by the ADL, then you know you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, but see, a lot of people will make these remarks. Well,
if they're behind you, you know something's going wrong.
Yeah, but you see, the problem that people are fooled into falling for is that people will say, well, we have to vote for someone. We have to, and he's the lesser of the evils. That isn't true. This is another deception they use with people. They say, well, you have to pick somebody. We don't have to pick any of them. We can say no to every single one. But people, this is a trick, and you'll see it's coming from the same group of people. And it's because they're putting out their candidates, and they say, well, you have to pick one of these. But we don't. We can say no to everyone, and we can say no to the media. We can say no to the people in control of our military. We don't have to live in this as, you know, frightened little rabbits that have to do this or have to do that. And that's what they're trying to create the impression. Well, we have to pick the lesser of the evils, and we don't have to. We can pick somebody that's better. We can say no to all of them, because it won't do us any good just to put in one politician anyway, even if Ron Paul is honest. What is he going to do there? The media is still lying. The government's still lying. The FBI, you mentioned the intelligence agencies. The FBI, ever since it began, has been pretending that there is no organized crime. It's right from the beginning. And the CIA, they may have been there. The Zionist movement, remember, it got started officially in 1890s. The FBI came after that, and so did the CIA, and they may have been created with Zionists right in them from the beginning. And there's no need to infiltrate. They were there from the beginning. And so this is what we have to, the problem of the infiltration may have been right when the place was created. And we can't just replace one politician when we have corruption at this extreme.
Well, you guys, when we're all looking at this stuff and people, let's go back to Ron Paul just for a second. I mean, and then I'm going to go to somebody I used to have on the show here, and Muhammad and I talked about it recently. Ron Paul talks a lot on his shows about Bin Laden being a result of our foreign policy, and that terrorism around the world is and Al Qaeda is because we were in places we shouldn't be, and he knows full well, and as anyone with a brain knows, that Al Qaeda was a fabrication of the intelligence services, chiefly MI6, CIA and Mossad. And he knows that, you know that, I know that, anybody with a brain who's done any research knows that. and yet he will parrot these lies. And then the other day, somebody sent me a article written by somebody who I used to have on the show, Ted Pike. And in it, it says, "Well, what do you expect if we're out, you know, causing trouble in Arab countries? We got to have to expect being attacked like we were in New York City on 9/11." In other words, lending his gravitas to the story that 9/11 was done by Arab terrorists. And I was dumbstruck, but I knew something was wrong. And Eric, I'm going to bring you to the person who was shoving Ted Pike down your throat not 6 or 8 weeks ago, telling you, why doesn't Daryl put him on? Why doesn't he go and do another interview? Why doesn't he have him on? Well, and so the situation with this pressure that we were receiving, Eric, from this so-called supporter, and now we know the real nature of this person's support, was in fact pushing us to do an interview with a guy that maybe was foreknowledge, possibly, that he was going to start saying the Arabs did it. In other words, we would have looked like fools. And it's bad enough now, backtracking, that I've had Ted Pike on our show talking about, you know, Talmadic issues, when this guy is blaming the Arab community for the 9/11 attacks. And, I mean, if we had been just interviewing him, it would have been a big hit to our credibility. What do you think?
Well, yeah, she was saying, you know, Suzette was saying we should talk more about Ted Pike, have Ted Pike more on more often, put links more to his site. And she was really getting angry, like, come on, put more up there, more up there. But, you know, he does talk about something that's important, but that's all he talks about is the hate crime laws, nothing else. And so I would respond, like, we already interviewed him about this. How many times can we go over the same thing? But what it may be is this, that he and all the others, they put out a little bit of information for credibility, and then they steer you over towards those mean and nasty Arabs. And see, this could be the trick. And remember, Mohammed Rafik just made that remark about the investigator investigating himself. This is the concept that a lot of people don't get. They don't understand why would they expose themselves. Because it allows them to investigate themselves. They get to be the prosecutor, the investigator, the news reporter. They get to decide what happens to them. That's why they would promote themselves. That's why they would expose themselves. As long as they're in control, it doesn't matter if they're exposed.
Well, I mean, I was heartbroken to think that after all this information and all of this effort that has been placed out on the internet and all the conversations I've had with Ted, that he would actually place in one of his exposés the idea that Arabs were somehow even remotely responsible for the 9/11 attacks. Now, of course, there may have been some paid Arab participants in it, but certainly not the Arab community, and certainly it was not representing Islam in any way. Every single indication goes right back to Zionism and its minions. Nothing to do with Islam. And the idea that somebody would put that in a paper at this late date is really sickening to me.
Well, yeah, you'll see David Duke do it also. But you'll see a lot of the people who have been around since before 9/11, they're all lying. Even if you go to these Holocaust groups, they call themselves Holocaust revisionists. Like Cole, this one, Carlos Porter, someone just pointed out to me, you look at his site and he's supporting the official story of the President Kennedy assassination and sending you over to the McAdams site, which tries to support the official story. And you look at some of the other sites, even Joe Vials, you know, he put out a lot of information, but he was supporting the official story of Flight 77 crashing into the Pentagon. You'll see this, all the people that have been there at the time of 9/11, they were in place and they were ready to go. They all put out a little information, but they're all lying about something or other.
Is it possible that some of these people just haven't got it right and we're being too hard on them? Or, I mean, you know, we've done a pretty good job of sniffing out the shills in this mess. But at the same time, you pointed out earlier, you know, I'm doing this from a desk up in my loft, and you know, you're doing it from a living room chair, and Eric's doing it from an office. How are we to know definitively, unless we use our sixth sense? And you know something, my sixth sense about all this stuff has been a very big service to me, because this is really how I've
I've started the investigation into a lot of these people based on what my stomach's telling me. And as we've gone through time, I've confirmed with evidence that what I was feeling was correct.
Just coming back to what Eric said is, of course, 100% correct. Every statement that he's talking about there, when he's looked at these different people, they have no doubt at some time put forward false statements as advocates. The question then arises, were they knowingly lying, or were they just repeating somebody else's lying good faith? I think that's something that's difficult for us to answer. I think what is important is the work that you guys do in saying, this here is not true, and this person is either willfully lying or is not doing sufficiently good research to be that we can rely upon what they're putting out in 100% of cases. So this is one of the concerns. One of the good things is, and that the people in the movement, because when you have so many people trying to slip you false information from left, right, and center, some of it will get in because it's like a monsoon, isn't it? There's so many out there trying to do this. A few drops will get through. No doubt Joe Vials at that point made various statements. I would think that if he were alive now and had got further information, he may well have changed his opinion on that. I don't think he went out to sell Flight 77 per se. Somebody might have sold it to him knowing that he would present it, and maybe he took it from what he thought was an authoritative or reliable source. What we do know is that piece of information is wrong, but we do have to it's preferable, I think, to give people the benefit of the doubt in some cases.
Oh yeah.
Not in all, because in some cases they are willfully trying to mislead.
Well, you know what we do, Muhammad, and I'm going to let Eric speak on this in a minute here, but Eric, we don't often say that they're Zionists. We say that they're either useful idiots or they're not doing their due diligence. And there's a big difference between that and calling someone a Zionist. And in some cases, I've discovered, late that people were actually working hard to get a good message out, but screwed up, or they were just sleeping at the switch and not necessarily Zionist. But you'll notice as soon as I do make a claim that someone's a useful idiot, my detractors from the Zionist side of things say I'm calling them a Zionist. And they're trying to say I'm sliming them by calling them Zionists. This is another tactic they've used against us to try to discredit us. And in some ways, it's been successful.
Well, yeah, and see, one of the things, Muhammad is correct, we all pick up false information sometimes. But what gives away the people who are lying is that they never correct it. Year after year has gone by, Mike Rivero, for example, is still supporting Flight 77. Despite overwhelming evidence from pilots and photographs that it didn't hit the Pentagon. And that nobody could even fly a plane like that. See, this is the difference. When we pick up false information and someone points it out to us, we look at it, and then we'll say, yeah, you're right. We won't say that again. These people, they don't change. This
exactly.
is the difference.
I think that's very well put, Eric. The fact is that anybody who has followed yours and Daryl's endeavors over the last few years will have seen that where you've realized that something has been said that, hang on a minute, you go back and review things, you consider it. This is not, for all the listeners out there, this is not an endeavor to be taken lightly. This is a very serious business. And one of the things that both of you do is you go back, you review your own statements, you review the statements by other people, you review the material, not on an agenda, but just on an absolute fact basis. Does this actually hold water? Does it stand up? Is it correct as an objective fact? Or is it an opinion? Is it a slur? Etc., etc. Anybody who knows your work knows this is your MO. This is the way you two behave. That's why you can be relied upon. You have corrected things. As Eric says, there are people out there who are selling the same sucker punch over and over and over again. And they know it is.
And then what's really amazing is this thing about the Chinese are hiding in Canada, Mexico, and America ready to attack us. That is, I didn't realize it, but Alex Jones was pushing that in 1999 for the Y2K issue, and it may have been even before that. It's the same story. And it's been, what, 7 years?
He retreads the immigrants, and he retreads the what other one does he do here? The, well, the New World Order.
And the King of Spain is buying our highways.
The King of Spain, yeah. He's got retreads all over the place. In other words, he's dancing off the same dance card.
Well, the problem they have, you have to realize what the situation they're in. They are promoting lies. They're in a difficult position, not us. When you're promoting lies, what are you going to do? You can't just change them. What are you going to do? They're in a really bad situation, and this is why they can be exposed. And also, like Mohammed was saying, some of the people who are working with them, once they realize who they're working for, what they're doing, and what the effect is, some of them may realize, wait a minute, I don't want this. And they could turn against them. They could, if we could break down them internally, get rid of their support, which looks like what's happening right now. I don't think our military really wants to attack Iran.
Yeah.
And so if we can just get people, even if they don't do much, if they just do nothing, that would be an improvement. If they just resist the wars, if they resist helping the attacks, these terrorist attacks, you see, all that may have even been why that latest terrorist attack in Britain was just some gasoline containers and propane tanks. Maybe the British, who were working for them, were thinking, wait a minute, I'm not helping with this next one. And so they were left on their own, and they just threw some tanks together, put some gasoline in there, and, you know,
it was absolute nonsense, and it came across on the airwaves as you know, almost comedy, and we're not dealing, and Mohammed has something to add to this, too, because of what they didn't report in the press, and I'll let him do that himself. But this is almost like a retard doing a bombing or something. And take a look at this for a moment, ladies and gentlemen, when you think about this. This was a doctor. This man probably would be able to come up with all kinds of sophisticated things if it was real. The simple fact of the matter is he was brilliant in many regards. How many of you can go through medical school? But I'm sure you could have come up with a better device than what was used in London. Now, use your logic about this and understand that this was a farce from start to finish. Now, Mohammed, you have additional information to add to that about the family.
Yeah, if we can just first set some more scene on that, by the way, Dan. I mean, I would like to point out there is the first day that our new Prime Minister took the helm, and then very conveniently there was a terrorist attack on the first day for him to stand there, chin stuck out like Desperate Dan, saying, don't worry, I'll save you, Olive Popeye style to the nation, I'm going to protect you all. So it was very helpful from his perspective.
Yeah.
All the team could go out there and say how they were protecting the nation. There was less fuel. You know these trucks which drive up and down the road that have these external tanks?
Yeah.
There was less fuel in the car than in a truck tank. So if you think about it like that, a truck having a crash is actually more dangerous. Petrol, of course, is only an accelerant. It's not an explosive. It burns nicely, but it doesn't blow up on its own. So there are so many things that are wrong. The doctor himself, Daryl and Eric, was a neurosurgeon, not even a GP. He's a neurosurgeon. Spent a long time in training to reach that stage. And one of the things I've seen from a friend of the family, he's posted on something on the internet, who knows this family very well, has said that actually his wife and child were with him in the vehicle, and that has been removed from the press. He was actually traveling with the family at the time that the car burst into flames.
So basically what this is someone murdered him, or someone tried to murder him.
Well, I mean, we certainly don't know the facts. The only thing we can be certain of is it's not a terrorist attack.
Yeah.
The guy was not known as a terrorist. All the people from his medical school who've known him for 9 years as he studied to become a neurosurgeon knew that he was a man devoting his life to making people better and trying to save lives and improve lives.
Mm.
So he's least likely possible candidate, even from a psychological profile, of a suicide bomber. It's just nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah. And I my heart goes out to his family and the suffering that they've been put through. There's a lot more of that kind of suffering going to be meted out if we don't start cohesing around these truths. I have to say to the listener now, you know, the idea that the French Connection should only be getting 12,000 people a day at the website, I think is a shame. It's tragic. Now, when you take a look at the quality here, and the hard work that's been done, and then when you see the inability of my partner Chris Bolin to affect any serious resistance to that criminal enterprise in Cook County, then it becomes frightful for us to think that after all this time we could be this small. We need people to take our research more seriously and go out and aggressively show people how we've been accurate and how we've been correct and how these people have done a somewhat effective job of marginalizing our efforts. Because Eric and Mohammed, they have been effective at marginalizing us. You have to admit it.
Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, Eric. My view on that, of course, is, Daryl, this is very much, you know, you're putting in a huge amount of effort, and so is Eric, and to some degree you are marginalized on the truth movement, but as I say, you are a barometer. These people come and listen and they watch what you do. And I keep coming back to this. When they threw you off the airwaves and they tried to close you down and shut you down, what's actually happened since then is that you are building and building and building and increasing and increasing. And although that growth may not be exponential or accelerating, they've still failed in what they've intended to do. What we do want people out there to do is go out there and, like Eric has on his website, have conspiracy parties, invite people round, show them evidence, try and spread it, even if it's with a buddy at work, just anybody. Try and get more people involved in this. Take some responsibility, because we've done this. We're not getting salaried, ladies and gentlemen, and it takes a lot of our time, and we've suffered maybe on a personal level. We're all happy to do that for whatever reasons. We have our own motivations. We're all happy to go through that, but we'd like you to get more active on the campaign side.
I got to correct you, Mohammed. I'm certainly not happy to. I would much rather be rolling around in the grass with my German shepherds and hanging out with my wife. This is not how I expected to spend my life after 50, and certainly not having had the best of health. This would certainly not have been my choice. But at the same time, I don't see an alternative here. I see that there will be zero happiness if we don't stop them. And I mean, it's like, you know, you haven't got a choice here if you really look at it rationally. There's nothing that you can do other than fight them or just roll over and become a victim. And I'm never going to be a victim of anybody. I'll be a victim of my own success maybe, but that's the only thing. Eric, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I know nobody really wants to do this, but we have the opportunity now with this technology. We can now break their control over people. They don't have control over this internet, the CD-ROMs or the DVDs. So rather than be frightened, see, this is what they're also trying to promote is this fear. Be afraid that they're going to put chips under you, that the Chinese are going to come after you. They're hiding down there in Mexico. All you have to do is not be afraid and realize it's a small group. If we could just find more people, we could deal with it.
Yep.
And it's hard because they don't want to listen, but if you just keep, if enough people continue, it will get through to people.
Well, you know, go ahead, Mohammed.
Maybe we should try and take the message to some of these millions of Chinese people down in Mexico. They may be able to help.
Well, you know, I mentioned to both of you guys privately that when I did my most recent statistics search on the website, we're actually growing outside of the United States quite well. In fact, the thousands of new listeners primarily have come from outside the U.S., and we're right now at about a 56-44 split and heading toward 50-50. When I looked at what we were represented in each area of the world, there were 150 countries listed, and we were in 144 of them. That means people from almost every country on Earth have heard of the French Connection. So the penetration worldwide is certainly evident. And you, if you go to a website like Alexa.com, most of the countries that are actually tuning into us are not even part of their statistical model. And you would think that we're doing a very bad job. In fact, we're growing quite remarkably just over the last few months here. And I do have to say that that is a change, but it's certainly not enough. And I have to say, you know, with the last time you were on, Mohammed, you talked about people burning this to CDs, and we really don't know quite how many people are actually hearing this broadcast in that format. But, you know, the amount of change.
To add on to that, though, I'm aware now of some people who've actually been burning the CDs and circulating them at large Muslim gatherings where several thousand Muslims have turned up and all left with CDs and things like that. So, those people are continuing on with that work, and it is, you know, there are quite a few different groups of people in the UK now doing that.
Mm. Well, I hope that people are doing that all over the world. And for people who don't, you know, Eric, I noticed, and I want to ask you to maybe get in touch with the person that's been translating a lot of your stuff into French and Spanish. Maybe they could do the same more aggressively on the French Connection site.
Well, they've got some already. They've got some of mine. They just haven't done it recently, but. Yeah, there is different languages now, some French and a couple Spanish ones. So I guess some of them got burned out a bit and they needed a break. It's a lot of work.
I think also it would be very helpful if we could maybe get some of this stuff into Persian and Arabic.
Mm. Yeah, our numbers in the Muslim world are not as solid as they could be. We've got several thousand a month coming in, but that's certainly not enough.
No, I think that many people there would be very, very interested in this type of material, but they're not that strong on the English language. And, you know, sadly, they did have an outlet once upon a time, Al Jazeera, many years ago, before they sold nearly 50% of the stock to a Zionist, actually did report things fairly independently. But Al Jazeera now is well under Zionist control, I'm sorry to have to say.
Well, the other country that I would like a lot more penetration in is Israel. And I have to say that if there's any Israeli out there that's looking to stop the Zionist movement, and I may be for self-preservation, that the country is certainly going to become more and more targeted as the truth comes out about the Zionist movement. And you may well be interested in having this cabal that runs Israel start imploding from internal actions. And I'm certain that there are a lot of people throughout Israel who want Israel to be reformed entirely. And change it from a country that is the fourth most powerful military in the world with 4 million residents to a country that maybe is living harmoniously with its neighbors and not being a murderous, aggressive, criminal state. And so if that's what you're interested in, we invite righteous Jews from anywhere in this world to help us to get that message to both Israelis and Jews around the world. What do you guys think?
Well, I must say as a Muslim that, you know, it's a great cause of distress that so many well-meaning Jews have been deceived by one small section of its own community into believing that their safety, their future, and all of these kinds of things are all wrapped up with the Zionist state. It is a great shame that members of that community, such as the Netzarei Carter and the Satmar, the Orthodox, who've gone out and said, actually, the teachings of Zionism are 100% diametrically opposed to the teachings of Judaism, and we shouldn't be doing this even on a religious level. I think it's a great shame that those people themselves have been tyrannized by members of the Zionist community, and I would really, really hope that Jewish people would look into this and try and free themselves from it.
Yep.
Because they are being deceived, and they're parting with money as well. They're not receiving money from the, as Professor Finkelstein points out, that's been taken in their name for the Holocaust monies, which have been taken by the billions and tens of billions from governments and private institutions. It's not been redistributed among them. They really need to reassess their opinion and say, no, we're just guys in the world. We want to live here in the world and be at peace with everybody else.
Yep.
We don't really want to be aggressors, and we certainly don't want to be, you know, on a world domination trip, you know?
Well, I agree with that. And Eric, could you have a punctuation for that?
Well, the interesting thing is, if you look at what Arthur Koestler is saying, you know, their homeland isn't even in Israel. It's over
That's
by
right.
Khazaria. And I think, I have a feeling if a lot of the Jews really understood not just what the Zionist movement has done to them, but what it's done to other people, and then when they realized that's not their homeland, a lot of them might say, I'm out of here. I'm leaving Israel. I'm going back to where my relatives are or just somewhere else. They see, it may just end up destroying Israel, because at this point, I don't know if the Arabs are ever going to live in peace. After all the bombings they've gone through, after all the abuse, I don't see how it's going to ever work. They may just have to dissolve Israel and say, just get out of here, go back.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, you know, Israel in dissolution would certainly be something I'd advocate, because basically what they did is stole that country in the onset. So, however, the Jewish people themselves, people of Jewish faith that have been lied to wholesale, who have been actually victimized by this same group, and we've talked about on the French Connection repeatedly how the Hitler regime targeted non-conforming Jews in the community that were not willing to go to Palestine. So in other words, if you wanted to remain a rather cosmopolitan Jew working in Germany, you were sent to a work camp because you weren't going along with the program. And the Zionists had no problem, you know, pushing the Nazi regime into punishing people for not going along with their program.
Well, yeah, you see, if you look at the number of victims they have, the victims of this Zionist group is so many tens or hundreds of millions, including Jews, that if people really knew the extent of it, I think a lot of people, even Jews, would say, get rid of it.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they're going to survive, because look at the Arab nations are growing. Iran is getting ready and worried. How are they going to survive? And what's going to happen when Turkey starts realizing they were blamed for all the massacres that they didn't do?
That's right.
I mean, they're surrounded by people who are wising up to what's going on. And so I don't know. It doesn't look good to me. And I think that's why there's all this panic among them, and why they're so desperate now to get all of us to shut up. And, you know, stop exposing this. I think they're worried even some of their own people are going to start realizing that.
Well, this is what the point I wanted to make with Muhammad. I'll let you do it. You know, the fastest way to dismantle Zionism is from inside. And I mean, you know, of course, attacking them from outside often works against us, because oftentimes people will cohese together in a tighter knot. Because they feel that they are, you know, that they're being attacked. But what I'd like to do is to get people from within the Jewish community to start looking at people around themselves saying, hey, we've been part of this criminal enterprise, and we need to change this. And this might be the fastest way to dismantle these criminals' network.
You're no doubt correct there. And the one of the things they must realize, these people, is under no circumstances and in no way are we making any kind of threat against
That's right.
the Jewish people or,
nope.
or the Israeli state, even for that matter. What we are saying is that, you know, should they really, you know, you mentioned Ted Pike earlier on, and we've discussed this idea of absolute facts, which can be tested and observed. With different faiths, those things can have different meanings. You know, the people can interpret it according to their own scripture and teaching, however they wish. That's
everyone filters information based upon their own experiences, no doubt.
That's right, and their faith may affect them in the way they feel about it. The when we say, oh, look, say prophets, like, as we know, Bush and co on the right-wing Zionist Christian front are saying, oh, look, biblical prophecies being fulfilled, and this war and these people and this, that and the other. Well, that's all well and good, but let's stand back and let God fulfill the prophecies, and let's not try and do it ourselves. The problem with the Zionists is that they're trying to fulfill a biblical prophecy. And the strange thing is that they've managed to get a large number of atheistic Jews even to support the Zionist enterprise on the basis of, hey, look, we'll protect you, buddy. And we know what that's Brown coming into power. That's making those people feel frightened, so that the only people who will protect them are the Zionists. Therefore, these people are preventing me from another Holocaust, from being turned into a bar of soap or whatever. And therefore, I'm throwing my lot in with them. What they've got to realize is that we're in no way threatening them. if the Zionist movement were to disappear, they would not suddenly be vulnerable and actually be welcomed.
They would be free.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right with that. You know, here's the thing. I mean, I make a clear distinction against political Zionism as a movement, as a criminal enterprise, as a mafia, as I call it, the Judeo-Nazis, or the Jews themselves, who, you know, I've grown up with and knew when I went to school in New York and whatnot. And these are not the same people. They're not the same group. And in often the case is that they have been frightened into supporting Zionism for reasons that you can see are propaganda based, and what we need to do is re-inform them that, in fact, throwing in their lot with these people is, in fact, going to get them in hurt rather than helped.
Yeah. Well, I hope they can see through it, because I do. I mean, just looking at the way their route map is and where their road map is going and where they're on trajectory to, they are on trajectory to suffering. They are on a collision course with the rest of mankind, and they will find themselves on the receiving end of it. The only thing to do, the only wise thing to do now, is to stand back and say, this adventure was wrong. It's wrong to try and impose belief through force, because the greater Zionist state, all these land grabs that they're doing, trying to take back a biblical map that was handed to Moses 3,400 years ago. I mean, it's just a nonsense to take it all by force and impose that belief on people.
Yeah.
The Bible is a real estate document. You know, this is a big planet. There's enough room for everybody and for everybody to get on. It isn't necessary for them to be there. It's not necessary for them to take these things by force. And it's not necessary for them to try and create a one-world government which gets ruled out from there. You know,
yep.
These are pipe dreams of a religious minority imposed on the majority of that community.
That's exactly right. Well, you know, guys, I got to thank both of you for spending all this time. We've got a big file here, Eric. I want to thank you for coming on this Friday night broadcast of the French Connection. This discussion has been very powerful, very interesting. And Mohammed Rafig, a friend of mine, and I'm very proud to work with you on these issues. And Eric Huffschmidt, as always, my partner in this endeavor. Our hearts go out to the Boland family. We are still very convinced that there is no safety for them, and the fact that we've heard from them in a limited way only confirms for us that he's alive but not safe. And so that being known, ladies and gentlemen, we need to keep a very close eye on developments and make sure that that family it can get back into a safe situation and begin to feel free to express themselves openly again. And watch out for that person that's representing them, because I will never sign on to her support for this whole case. That's coming from me. I don't care what is shared in the end. That person is the wrong person to be speaking for them. And if Chris has signed on to that, Chris, you got to take a look at this one, please. Ladies and gentlemen, until the next time, Daryl Bradford Smith telling each and every one of you to please be well. Bye-bye now.